Hello and welcome back to Shit We've Read, a sci-fi and fantasy book podcast hosted by some geeky friends. I am going to be your host on this episode, leading you through this discussion of Brighter Than Scale, Swifter Than Flame, written by Neon Yang. But I can't do the discussion alone, so joining me is my co-host as always, Laura Benson. Hey Laura, how's it going?
Pretty well. I am happy to be here as always.
I'm happy to have you, and I'm also happy that it's a little cooler today, thankfully.
Yes.
It's been really hot in Sacramento, and
yes,
I don't feel like
I'm
sweating.
Got a nice little breeze today.
Yeah, yes. So, a lovely day for book discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And joining us for this discussion, I'm happy to announce that we have a special guest host, Fictional Tiff, who is the host of the Sacramento Silent Book Club, among many other things. But hey, Tiff, how's it going?
Good. I'm doing great. I've had an insane work week this week, but I've made it to the other side. It's only Wednesday, but it's been a long week.
Oh, yeah.
You are on the last half of the week, so you're getting through it.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you're able to make it despite your busy week. For everybody listening who may not know who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Like, what kind of books do you enjoy reading? And what other things are you up to other than hosting Silent Book Club?
Yeah, my main claim to fame is doing the Sacramento Silent Book Club. The Silent Book Club was just featured on Oprah and in People magazine, so everybody's getting a lot of attention right now. So
nice.
Actually, a celebrity, but
oh wow!
No, I'm Leo, so I have to always say that no matter what I'm doing. But it's my whole personality. But let's see. So I do the Silent Book Club. I also make my own pop music. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go across a bunch of genres, but I do my own music under the name Fictional Tiff. I'm writing a book. What else
Ooh.
Do? I stay very busy. Like, I just posted a few days ago. I'm like, am I talented by having a bunch of hobbies, or do I just have ADHD?
I saw that.
I'm also a weightlifter. I'm a core reporter. I'm a single mom. Oh, and I go-go dance at Jolene's in San Francisco.
You do it all.
I think that's everything.
That's a lot. And I think it could be both. I think you could be multi-talented and also have ADHD. I mean,
yeah. There's this book that I really love, Midnight Library by Matt Haig.
Yeah.
And the author posted something probably more recently, like when the book had come out, but he was saying, like, because it's like this book where the woman goes through all of her different dreams that she's mm-hmm. ever had, like, for her life of what she wanted to be as an adult. And anyway, he made a post about it, like, is this really just like the dreams that I've always had of all of the different things I've wanted to do in my life? Or do I just have ADHD and I wanted to try to live out every single thing that I've ever tried and started doing? Like, it's probably both.
I think it's commendable that, you know, you're fitting all your lifetimes into one. You know, I think, at least for myself, there are so many times, like, if I could do it over, I would do this. But, like, why don't I just do it now, you know? And you're doing it all.
Mm-hmm. That's why you're doing a podcast.
That's it. That's
yep.
one of them.
This is one of the things that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you'd asked me 5 years ago that I'd be doing a podcast, I'd be like, what? What are you talking about? But here we are.
Yep.
Well, great to have you. I'm so excited that you agreed to join us for this episode. I'm excited to discuss it. But before we get to the book, we always start our episodes discussing some of the other shit we're reading. So, Laura, I'll start with you. What are some of the other things you're reading?
I just finished, before reading our featured book for this episode, I finished reading Automatic Noodle by Annalee Newitz. We received an ARC from Tor.com, so thank you to them. It was a nice little cozy near future novella about a crew of abandoned food service bots that open their very own restaurant. It was really interesting because it takes place in a post-war era in San Francisco. So it was really, it was kind of fun because there was a lot of like mentions of places and stuff in California in general that I was like, oh, I know that place.
That's always fun.
But it was really, it was, I mean, cozy was definitely is a perfect word to describe it. You know, it was these food service bots that are in this ghost kitchen. They kind of take over their delivery app account. They rebrand themselves. They advertise as the local lunch spot for the neighborhood. They start becoming known for producing the tastiest hand-pulled noodles in the city.
Mm.
But then, you know, there's always got to be something that happens. And so
of course
they have to figure out what's going on before their ratings plummet and puts them out of business. So it was really interesting. For being a novella and being about robots, I felt like it had a lot of different themes in it. And it one thing that really stuck out to me was it talks a lot about what freedom is. So freedom for people, freedom for the robots, that kind of thing. It was really fascinating to read. So I highly recommend it. It's not out yet. Again, we got an ARC. It is publishing August 5th, 2025. So I highly recommend anybody who is interested in those kinds of themes, put that on your pre-order, definitely.
I've not read it yet. It's coming up soon, so I'll be reading it very shortly, but I have been hearing a lot about how it is very timely to stuff happening now around the world
in
the country. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'll say about that. But anyhow, thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Tiff, what's some of the other shit you're reading?
You know, I didn't even think about, I'm also reading a cozy book until you were talking about your book. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm also reading that because I'm always reading like a ton of books at the same time. I can't just read one. But I'm reading Can't Spell Treason Without Tea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's cute. It's like cozy fantasy. And she says in the back, like, oh, yeah, I definitely was inspired by Legends and Lattes. So she like isn't hiding it at all. And it's very, very similar to Legends and Lattes. So it's like, okay, if you like this one, you're definitely going to like this one because I took a lot of inspo from it. But I'm actually really enjoying that one. And then what else am I reading? I just finished, two books. This one, Out of the Drowning Deep.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's a little novella too. I read this while I was getting my most recent tattoo done, which is Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun to read like kind of a monster book while getting a monster tattoo.
Yeah, totally.
And the imagery in this book is really cool. And that's as much as I'll say about it is like the imagery. There's like my favorite scene in it is actually just like one of the angels in this book. And it kind of toys around with like God and angels and like how seriously should people actually take religion. But I really like one of the like quote unquote angels. They're kind of like demon angels. But anyway, half of their body, they're like non-binary. It's like a beehive and like little octagons full with like bees swimming in and or not swimming. bees flying like in and out of their like flesh that's like dripping in honey. So it's like that was like really cool. I was telling my tattoo artist all about it and he's like my captive audience, so
can't go anywhere.
listen to me talk about it. But then I also just recently read Outdrawn, and this one's so cute. It's an independent, like, romance, lesbian romance. And they're both webcomic creators, and they're, like, fighting for, like, the top spot on this website of webcomic
creators.
So it's an enemies to lovers, and I don't read a ton of romance, but this one was really good. Although my only, like, quote-unquote gripe is, like, both of these characters are very mature for like their early 20s. And so they make a lot of really great decisions for their relationship and like communicate really well, which is like really great in a romance, because my least favorite thing in a romance is when the characters don't communicate.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about that a lot.
Okay, yeah. So I can appreciate that. I'm like, it's not very realistic, but I don't think romance is supposed to be. But anyway, I really enjoyed that book, too.
Nice.
Very cool. Yeah. We did an episode on Out of the Drowning Deep, I think in January of this year. So
Maybe I was somewhat influenced by seeing it on your page, because I think I bought it around that time period.
Oh, maybe.
What are you reading, Jason?
So I'll briefly mention a book I finished recently, but I'm going to talk about something else that I'm more excited about. But I recently read We Solve Murders by Richard Osman, which is a mystery novel about a young woman who is a private security officer. She is hired to look to protect celebrities, so basically a bodyguard. And it's about her going around kind of the world with this author who she's hired to protect, and this case that somehow starts involving her father-in-law, who is a retired police detective in the UK. And so their two stories kind of intertwine and end up having to work together. So it's this really kind of fun, dynamic duo of detectives going around solving the case. But it's funny because you have this old curmudgeon-y guy and a young woman, and the author is also part of it. She's deep in the mystery solving too, and she is rich and powerful and doesn't care about anything because everything just kind of goes her way. And it's just kind of fun to see the dynamic of all three people come together and forming this detective agency kind of thing. So I read that and that was fun. But I want to mention, it's not a book, but it is based on comic books, so it still counts. The new Superman movie that came out recently. If anybody listening has not watched it yet, go watch it. It's so good. I loved it so much. And I'm sure if you're online, you've seen nothing but Superman everywhere, at least on my feed and my, you know, the circles I follow. But it's so good and it's just so hopeful, which I think we all need right now in the world the way it is. It just brings a sense of hope of seeing this man do right just for the sake of doing right. And the memes going around of saying, I can't wait to see an immigrant, you know, defeat a billionaire, is like, oh, that's so resonant right now. And it's so true. And it's so funny to hear people be upset at the fact that Superman's an immigrant, even though he always has been since he was introduced in 1938. It's a fun movie. So yeah, I've watched it twice and we'll probably watch it a third time at least. Yeah. Someone else invited me to go see. So I saw it first with Laura. But before I even saw it with Laura, someone else asked if I wanted to go see it. And I'm like, I'll probably see it at least twice. Even if it sucks, I'll probably watch it twice. And so I watched it a second time. And I enjoyed it more the second time. I think the first time I went with very tempered expectations. I was excited about it, but I didn't want to be disappointed. And I was also a little curious because there were so many elements in it. It was like, how is this all going to come together? So I watched it and I enjoyed it, but I left with very reserved feelings. But the second time I went in, it was like, I know exactly what I'm getting. And so my heart was just wide open, as cheesy as that sounds. And it was just a good time. So, yeah. Anyhow.
Well, that's good to know. I told my husband that if he wants to see it in theater, that I am happy to go watch it for a second time with him. So I'm not pushing him to go, but if he decides he does want to, then I will be there.
I'll push him for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't come from me.
Yeah, no.
I haven't seen it yet, so I have to go see it. One of the random things I heard about it is there's been like a huge surge in like people adopting dogs because of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Even just that little piece of it, I'm like, oh, I love that so much.
Yeah, I saw it was like 500% surge in like people are just Googling like adopting dogs.
Yeah, I just hope the people that are actually adopting now are going to be, you know,
yes,
responsible dog owners.
Yeah.
Dogs are not easy to take care of. And Crypto shows that.
He does.
Honestly.
He does.
Very honestly. But I loved Crypto.
Which is kind of funny that people are Googling, you know, dog adoptions after the portrayal of the dog who wasn't the best.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like and you can tell from the trailers and some of the, like, the little teasers that they released ahead of time. Like, he's not a super trained dog, unfortunately. But I loved him. I was, after Jason and I got out of the movie, I was explaining to him how I felt like I saw all of my dog's personalities in Crypto at different points in the story. So it was just kind of fun to not see only one type of dog personality. You could kind of see all of them there. So, but I do agree the movie in general is definitely something to see if anyone is feeling, you know, down, a little depressed about our times right now, need a little bit of hope. This is a good movie to see.
So. It's pure escapist fantasy, and I love it for that. All right, enough talking about movies. I don't know who brought up movies. We're talking about books. Specifically, Brighter Than Scale, Swifter Than Flame by Neon Yang, who is a non-binary and queer Singaporean author of speculative fiction. The book is a queer fantasy novella that was published in May of this year, so just very recently came out. Laura, you know I'm going to pick on you. Do you want to read the synopsis for us?
Yeah, I'll read it. All right. A new queer Asian-inspired fantasy novella about a renowned dragon slayer who never takes her armor off in public. Brighter Than Scale, Swifter Than Flame reads like She Who Became the Sun meets the Mandalorian with dragons. The fiercely independent nation of Quanbao is isolated, reclusive, and something of a mystery to the rest of the world. It is rumored that there, dragons are not feared as is right and proper, but instead loved and worshipped. Yeva is perhaps a strange emissary to these people, not only because their face has never been seen in public, but because they are a hero born to a birthright that makes them suited for their task, hunting dragons. And so the dragon hunter must woo Quan Bao's queen, the Lady Suki, to understand what secrets she is hiding. A woman reasonably suspicious of Yeva's intentions and the imperial might of the throne she represents, Suki must bear the burden of the safety of her entire people. How can she trust this stranger newly arrived to her court, a weapon forged in blood and fire, to understand what her people need and how best to safeguard their future?
Thank you, Laura.
Of course.
I have a question that I'm going to bring up later, but it comes out of the synopsis.
Okay.
And just some of the language in the synopsis affected my reading of it, and I have questions for both of you. But anyway, always, we're going to start with our non-spoiler first impressions, so just let us know what you think. No spoilers, save that for the end. Tiff, as our guest, I will let you begin. What did you think of this book?
I loved it. I am somebody who, if a book is well written, great job, 5 stars.
Easy enough, all right.
I'm an easy to please reader, and this book pleased me easily.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Perfect. Yeah. I think we had discussed at a previous Silent Book Club meeting that you also enjoy dragons, correct?
I do love dragons.
Which is, one of the reasons why we thought you'd be perfect for this episode.
Yes, I love dragons, and I'm actually writing a book involving dragons too. So that's actually my goal of the last like couple years has been to like read more dragon books. So there was no way I could turn this one down.
Perfect.
It was perfect. Yeah, I really liked all of the queer symbolism in it too. But we can talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Laura, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it also. I did not remember what I was going to be reading other than it was queer and it had dragons in it. So I didn't really have any expectations. And I definitely kept making comparisons to Mandalorian as I was reading. Obviously, mm-hmm. made the correct assumption. I thought it was really interesting the different. It's I don't know that it's a magic system necessarily. It kind of felt magic-y, but also kind of not. It just felt different compared to other books that I read, and I liked the different legends that were written into the story, and how it's kind of the book itself is kind of like a tell all of a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was cool to go in thinking this is a story that the rest of the world isn't supposed to really know about this person. And so I just kind of had fun like learning things as we were going and kind of piecing together some of the mystery around what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, loved the queerness. 100%. I loved that. And it just felt so natural. So there, it wasn't weird. It wasn't pushed. It wasn't looked down on or anything. So yeah. I enjoyed that aspect.
Cool. Yeah, I also enjoyed this book. I thought it was very well written. The writing, I thought, was beautiful. There were a couple passages in there that I thought really, really like stood out and seemed a bit lyrical here and there. I thought the descriptions of the world building, the magic system kind of that you're alluding to, Laura, that was all very well done. This book feels so much richer than just a novella.
Yeah,
it's so short, but there's so much in it, and I really got a good sense of like kind of the world that it existed in. So I really commend the author for doing a good job there. The love story that was there is very cute and fun and believable, very queer normative. Yeah, I really enjoyed this book. Yeah, I'll leave it there for non-spoilers, but I was a big fan of this.
Nice.
Yeah. And yay, like you said, Laura,
we all
like,
liked it.
Yeah, and like you said, you can't help but compare it to The Mandalorian. So
yeah.
So I think that worked in its favor, that I kind of just think The Mandalorian is cool already. So like, oh, here's a new Mandalorian. So I think it helps yeah. in this instance. But yeah, we all liked it.
Yeah. Hey, internet bookworms. We love books in all their forms, paperbacks, ebooks, and audiobooks.
And thanks to bookshop.org and libro.fm, it's easy to build your perfect TBR online for the comfort of your own home and keep Shit We've Read running.
First up, let's talk about bookshop.org. They've got thousands of titles, from bestsellers to indie gems, and they now offer ebooks alongside paperbacks and hardcovers. Every purchase you make through our bookshop link supports this very podcast.
And for our audiobook lovers, meet Libro.fm. Audiobooks are the perfect way to squeeze more reading into your busy life, whether you're doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing. The free Libro.fm app lets you listen to all the same audiobooks as the big guy.
You know who we're talking about.
But your purchases directly support us. Plus, all Libro.fm audiobooks are DRM-free, so you truly own your audiobooks.
If that isn't enough reason to switch to Libro.fm, they're sweetening the deal by giving our listeners 3 audiobooks for the price of 1 when you start a new monthly membership with promo code SWRPOD. That's promo code SWRPOD.
Just remember, to support the show, make sure you use the special links in our show notes or go to shitweveread.com.
A big thank you to bookshop.org and Libro.fm for supporting our show.
And as always, thank you, the listeners, for listening, sharing, and reading along with us. Now let's get back to our episode. Okay, now the fun part. We get to talk about spoilers. So anybody listening, if you have not read this book and do not want things spoiled, this is your opportunity to turn away and go read it first. If you don't care about that, proceed at your own risk. Okay, so yeah, spoilers. Anybody want to, anything big that you want to get off your chest right away? Or Tiff, how are the dragons for you?
I could have used more dragons. Yeah. I love me a novella. Big fan of novellas because I love a book that I can read in like 1 or 2 days. It's
mm-hmm.
perfect. mm-hmm. But yeah, I wanted more dragon. I felt like there was like such a build And then it's like, there's a, this girl is a dragon. And then like, and then that's the end.
Yeah.
But yeah. I really liked it. If I could have more, I would have more.
I agree with that. Yeah. And I think it would have benefited the story because, okay, so the story is we have Yeva, who is this renowned dragon slayer, and it starts off, she's 13 years old and slays her first dragon protecting her sister. And then we learn that she's slayed who knows how many dragons. She's renowned. There's legends told of her. She never takes off her armor. But we don't really see any of that. We just hear that she's a renowned dragon slayer. And so the end, we're, you know, jumping ahead and a spoiler of her kind of renouncing all that to be with the woman she loves, who happens to also be part dragon, is like, well, that would have been way more impactful if we saw her slaying dragons and really got a sense of like what she has gone through. But you're just telling us that she's slaying dragons. I'm like, if you say so, I don't really feel that. I don't really feel like it's a big sacrifice because we haven't really earned that. So that is the one thing I felt like would have really benefited the story. I mean, what book doesn't need more dragons? Or, you know, like, if there's dragons, give me dragons. That's the fun part.
I think that the telling of the stories, other stories of other dragons, was probably why, like, the way that the author was trying to bring them in more.
Yeah.
So, like, they bring up, oh, yeah, so-and-so slayed a dragon in its child or something like that, which, spoiler, you know, ended up being Suki and her father. But they brought that story up a couple of times, and then they obviously bring up Yeva slaying the dragon as a teenager. But we didn't really get any other stories other than the legends of like how the city became.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do agree it would have given more weight to her decision to leave. But yeah, I mean, novella. So
yeah.
And also, I mean, to your point, Laura, like, the story is told via, like, someone telling a legend, yeah. Right? And so when you tell legends, when you tell kind of these fairy tales, there's a lot of detail missing, right? You're doing the broad strokes.
That's
and
true.
So, like, it makes sense for the delivery method. But if I'm looking at it as a book, which it is, it's like, yeah, just a little bit more dragons, please. Please, sir, can I have some more? But a very small gripe. Like, it didn't affect my enjoyment of the story at all. I really enjoyed the story.
Yeah. Slightly, somewhat related, going back to her decision to leave who she was and you know, pretend, like they said in the end, just tell them that she died.
Yeah.
So that she could have this new life. For me, I drew a parallel to religion. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were lines towards the end that were like, you know, he, like, talking about her cousin Emery. You know, he doesn't know anything else. He can't, he's not going to know anything else. Like, this is what he believes in. He's not going to change, kind of phrasing. And it just kind of made me think of religion and how some people are brought up to believe certain things. And then some people, you know, they find something else, they learn something else, and they don't want to continue. And then other people just can't fathom leaving. And I've mentioned here and there in previous episodes that I have experienced leaving religion. So some of that kind of I could kind of connect to a lot. And, you know, finding a new way of life that makes you happy and wanting to pursue that, you know, really, really stuck with me when I was reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite things that this book did was the queer relationship was so normal. Nobody was turning a head.
Mm-hmm.
Queer relationship. But the storyline itself had all of this symbolism of, like, this is the way that you've been following, and this is how you've been living your life. And, like, having this mindset of, like, this is the way, this is the right way to do things, and then having that gut punch of, like, oh, wait, this isn't, it's, things aren't always black and white, and there are other better ways to live my life kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that about this book. And, you know, a lot of fantasy books kind of do that where it's like, well, this part is normal and should be normal, but going to give you the symbolism for people still living in this world where it's not.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about sci-fi and fantasy. And we've talked about it before, is the genres allow you to talk about these issues in ways that are hidden, that aren't so on the nose. And you get the end of the story. And yeah, the story and the leaving behind everything that you knew could be symbolic of someone's queer journey, or it could be symbolic of someone's religious journey, or many other journeys, you know, of identity and finding yourself and figuring out who you are. But the queer part is normal. We're not, that's not the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is touching upon maybe your queer story if you wanted to, if it applies to you. And if not, then that's fine too. It's something else, which is, I think, what makes fantasy so great and why I love it. Because, I mean, sort like, I'm not a queer person. I consider myself a strong ally, but I'm not queer, so I've never had to deal with any of that. I also do not have a troubled religious upbringing. Religious, for sure. I'm Mexican, so Roman Catholic is kind of just part of the DNA, you know, but it wasn't troubled. So I don't really have those couple of journeys of figuring out, do those apply to me? Do I need to leave that? Who am I now? But everybody has their own version of that that's unique to themselves. And so I can read a book like this and still relate to the character of, like, you know what? I've been introduced this new information that has changed my perception of the world. Right? It was black and white, and now it's not so black and white anymore. Now it's a little bit of gray. And if I may connect it to Superman again, which is great because, like, Superman just knows right from wrong. It's killing these dragons now that I know that they're not just mindless beasts is wrong. I can't continue to do that. I'm going to leave behind everything. You know, and when your cousin Emery is like, you're just going to walk away for this person you've met? You've just known her for a very short amount of time?
Very lesbian of her.
Yeah, you can say it. I can't. But yeah, you're right. Okay, talking about Yeva, I want to bring up kind of the question I had that came out of the synopsis that kind of affected my reading. The language in the synopsis when talking about Yeva sticks with their and they. It doesn't reference that she's a woman. And maybe it was because the author is non-binary. I thought that Yeva was also going to be non-binary. And so when we start reading it, it just used she, her pronouns the entire time. And I kept waiting for that journey and it never happened. And so I was confused. I was like, wait, are they non-binary? Are they non-binary? But so use she, her pronouns? Like, what is happening here? But that could just be my own misinterpretation of and assumptions. I don't know if any of you had any thoughts on that.
I have no idea. Because, yeah, maybe the author didn't want you to know that it's she, her until you're, like, in it.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know, because the cover is pretty, it's pretty gay, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
You know, what I'm thinking, and again, I didn't remember the synopsis. This is the first time that I have read it since we decided to read this book for this episode. So I, reading the synopsis, was a little surprised that it was also using they, them. My assumption is, if I remember correctly, the beginning of the book, it says, you know, there's this legend of the Guild Knight of Mithrandan, says that this is the legend, but nobody really knows the legend. And so my assumption is nobody originally knows whether this Guild Knight is a man or a woman.
You're right.
That's it. You're absolutely correct. Yeah.
Okay.
You hit it right.
To me, the name Yeva sounds like a feminine name, but in this fantasy world, it may not be a gendered name. And so people may not have known.
Yeah.
And so that was probably also another way, like, why it was so easy for her to take on a different identity at the end of the book, because nobody really knew who she was as this knight, except for obviously their inner circle in the palace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And it's just kind of an artsy way of like bringing the character Yeva and the knight like not quite together yet. You don't know they're the same person.
So. Does that answer for
you? No, it does. It totally answered the question. Okay. You're absolutely correct. Yeah, I didn't put two and two together. I think that the entire time I was reading, I was so focused on the fact that I thought the character was non-binary, that I was waiting for that revelation and that journey, and it never happened. And so I was like, I'm confused now.
Oh, okay.
I'm very confused of why that didn't happen, but you were correct. The whole, it's right at the beginning of like, we don't know anything about this night, but we're going to tell you about this night.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, of course.
No notes.
It's always nice when we come here with questions and then somebody else can completely answer them.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about Yeva a bit. Let's talk about Lady Suki, the Lady King. No, Girl King, right?
Girl King, yeah.
Girl King. How do we feel about her as a character and just in general her interaction with Yeva? And do we see the twist coming that she?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I felt like pretty early on. I was like, she's a dragon. Did either of you like feel like there was a big reveal, or did we all kind of feel that way?
I kind of thought it might be a possibility, you know, so I wasn't surprised, but.
Yeah. Especially after her talking about the legends of the dragons and how they built the city and stuff. I was like, oh, she's a dragon. Yeah. Originally, I thought they called it her blood illness. I was like, maybe she's just legitimately sick, or maybe like that's another term for her period if it's happening every month, which I guess could still technically be what that means too.
Instead of having her period, she's just dragging for a week.
Yeah.
And I love that for her. If there's a list to sign up for that, I'll sign up.
Yeah, but yeah, I think at some point it just kind of became pretty obvious. But I can see why Yeva wouldn't have put that together early on. I mean,
yeah,
that's not a thing that she would think about in that world.
No. I knew for sure there was a connection between Suki and dragons. I didn't quite know what it would end up being. I thought maybe it would be, okay, she has this sickness. Maybe you need dragons to cure it or to maintain it. Like, maybe she herself isn't a dragon, but the cure comes from dragons. So therefore, you can't hunt them. We need them. So there's a couple different possibilities that I was predicting. Her being a dragon was one, but I don't think it was my main one, if I'm being honest. I think it was the cure being connected to dragons. I would have put money on that one.
The character herself, though, I really liked. And big fan. I would date her.
If
there's a book two of Dragon Smut, I'd read it.
We'll have to find that and invite you on.
I do kind of wish that we got a little bit more of her personality, though. Because obviously we're seeing everything mainly from Yeva's perspective. So, like, we're not seeing a lot of her personality, of Suki's personality. And she just always, to me, feels like she's in, you know, ruler mode. Like, she's very well-spoken and respectful and just, like that just embodies her, even when it's just her and Yeva. Which maybe that is just how she is, but also I wish I just saw a little bit more personal interactions. Because it skips all that. It doesn't tell us. It's just, hey, we're going to this. We went to this festival thing. Here's all of the legends. And then, will you go to the bath with me? And then it skips like a few months and says that they're now lovers. So we don't really like see that progression of an actual relationship.
I did like what we did see showed Suki's strength, that she is physically ill, and she is, they call it Girl King, and I feel like that modifier implies that like it's not the norm, that normally you would have a male king, but she's a girl king. And so I feel like she's in this position of power where perhaps could be looked down upon that you're a girl or seemingly not suited for, incompetent, and also sick. But despite all that, she was very strong, and she was very strong-willed, and, you know, telling Yeva, as like, no, you can't wear that armor around here. That's not the way it's going to be. We'll get you clothes. And then it's like, that helmet looks dumb. Like, here's a mask. Fine, you want to cover your face? Fine, here's a mask. But, like, she spoke up for herself and stood up for herself despite having all the markers of a weaker character. And so, of course, yeah, Yeva's going to be into that because who doesn't like a strong woman? Like, sign me the fuck up, you know? Like,
woman of authority.
Tell me what to do. Absolutely. It would have been cool to have some behind the scenes, like, she's just a total goofball or something. Yeah. But what can you do? It's a novella. She can only be...
Yeah.
But also it kind of falls in line again with it being a legend. Like, are they fully like three-dimensional characters? No. But when you're telling a legend, you don't talk about, you know, so-and-so also being into collecting little figures. No, they're a badass dragon slayer. You know, like, that is what they are. That's all they are.
You get the social media version of them and nothing
else. Exactly.
Good point.
Okay, so we have Yeva, we have Suki, and then I think the other main character, we have Emery, Yeva's cousin, which I wanted to like him. He came out, and I felt like he'd go either way, like, because he was excited to have a cousin. He's like, oh, we're cousins, you're here now. And then he just ended up being kind of part of the machine and part of the man, and just disappointing, but not surprising.
Yeah. A mediocre man, never seen.
Oh, man. Aw.
Fair. Very fair.
I think it's great that he's mediocre. Realistic.
Very realistic, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he comes from a life of privilege. Like, why does he have to question anything? Everything's been, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't have the best relationship with his dad. Like, he's gotten beaten. Like, he has, I'm not going to say everything's been like a cakewalk for him, but still, comparatively, you know, like, he has it pretty good. Why question any of that? So at the very end, of course, he's going to be like, yo, Yeva, you're going to ditch everything for this woman you just met? He's like, yeah, because it's the fucking right thing to do, guy. Like, grow up.
Yeah, I think he was written to be that way. Like,
yeah.
The way that you just explained of how you felt about him is the same way that Yeva felt too. Like, she expected more from him. She expected him to trust her when she sent that second letter and said, sorry, never mind. You know, she expected him to understand, listen to her, and he didn't. He just kept questioning her. And it's just, you know, from the start, we were hoping that he was going to be a good, understanding cousin, supportive of her decisions and whatnot. He, you know, they had that really intelligent conversation when he said, I'm sending you to go do this. Like, you are likely to be the best person rather than just us going in there and starting war. And so he sounded highly intelligent, reasonable, and just, unfortunately, in the end, he still was very much under the beliefs that he was taught.
I think it is a good representation of, like, friendships that you have, like, growing up, like, from kid to adult, of, like, you kind of expect everybody to grow along with you.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep growing and keep becoming a better person, or, you know, and you're there, you want what's best for your friends. You want them to, you know, be on a similar journey to yourself. And then, you know, something happens where you realize, oh, like, we're not actually on the same page. Like, you went in a totally different direction with your life. It's like, I love you, but you suck.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we've not talked about that either you want to discuss? It's a short book, but, you know, we all liked it. So what else we got?
You know, one thing that I kept thinking about after Suki explained that sometimes they're people who turn into dragons and there are dragons who turn into people.
Yeah.
And so it just kept making me think back to when Yeva slayed her first dragon. And I wonder who that dragon was. Obviously, not that big of a deal in the book, but just something I kept thinking. I was like, well, who was this dragon? Was this a dragon, just a dragon? Or was this a person who turned into a dragon? If it was small, does that mean it was a child? Did she kill another child? And I just kept thinking about that, because now I'm just wondering, you know, who are all of these dragons that she's been slaying over these years?
It's a fair question. I think also the flip side of that is, what people are actually dragons? Because if people can turn into dragons, but the dragons turn into people, so, like, nobody is who they seem, you know? And I think that has big implications for the world, for sure. That would be fun to explore.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it said that, yeah. Yeah, because do all dragons turn into people? Because at some point in the novella, I thought it said, like, oh, some dragons can shape-shift into a person.
Because that was her father.
Yeah. But maybe not every single dragon can be a person.
I think that, like, you have dragons. Like, the majority, if I had to guess, the majority of dragons are just dragons. They cannot change, or they're not changed. They were not changed into dragons. They were just dragons. But then you also have some dragons who could become people, and some people who could become dragons. And that's when it gets really funky, and you have, like, breeding, and that's where, like, the magic comes in, and that's interesting. I would love to see more of that.
I want to see more of that
in a future book. That would be fun to really explore. That has it always been
dragons? Yeah, is that just what the dragons want us to think?
It's all propaganda. But also, it makes for a really good smutty book.
It would, absolutely.
Are you asking for a prequel smut book about her parents?
I mean, I'm not asking for it, but if it comes into existence, I'll read it.
Yeah.
You know. One last thing I want to say, I listened to the audiobook, and I thought it was a good audiobook. The narrator, her name is Nancy Wu, and it was enjoyable. It was quick and easy, but I think she did a really, really good job. So if anybody out there is debating listening to it, I would say it's worthwhile. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
I read the audiobook too, and I really liked it. Oh, and I had actually read this author, one of their previous books. I think it's called The Black Tides of Heaven or something. But anyway, also a very good book that I actually read their previous book when I was not yet queer, and it very much plays with gender identity, and it blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, awesome.
Nice. I have one of their other books on my TBR. I just haven't gone to yet. The Genesis of Misery. That's been on my TBR for a long time.
Yeah, based off of just this novella, I do want to seek out some more of their books.
Yeah.
I did really enjoy the writing. It was... yeah, it was beautiful, but it was direct and like, yeah, I don't know, this is really good.
Agreed.
Cool. Okay, well, I'm glad they were all fans of it. That doesn't always happen, but it's always nice when we do all enjoy it. The overall ratings on Goodreads right now is 3.56. Not as high as I would like it to be. That's coming out of over 3,700 ratings. Tiff, you already said you give it 5 stars, right?
Yeah, 5 stars.
5 stars, perfect. Laura, how many stars would you give it?
I'm going to say probably a 4.5. It's a 4 or 4.5, because I feel like it's not, for me, it wasn't quite 5, because there are certain things that I just kind of wish we got a little bit more of, but it's definitely still at least a 4, because like you just said, beautiful writing. I loved the characters. I loved the world building, you know, everything in general was done really well.
Okay. Right now, it's sitting at a 4, but I did just finish reading it like 30 minutes before I started recording, so it's still fresh. I can easily see it creeping up the more I sit with it and the more I think about it. You know, like that's usually my indicator of is a book a 5-star book. Because if I like a book, it's a 4. Solid 4, easy. But if it stays with me and I keep thinking about it and I keep kind of wanting to return to it, that's what makes it a 5. So I got to wait to see. So right now,
okay.
A 4, that could change. So if you see me on Goodreads giving it more than that, don't call me out. I said I might change.
for me, I'm even easier on novellas versus real books because I'm like, they're giving you a little spoonful of art instead of like cereal bowl.
So like for the size, for the amount of pages.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think I'm also a little easier on novellas because you just don't have all the space, all the room to do more. And so if you knock it out of the park with just 150 pages, whatever this is, you did a really good job. Like, nice.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we have our ratings. All right, so let's talk about, just for fun, what we're reading next. Laura, what's next for you?
I just literally started last night Fable for the End of the World by Ava Reed. It's a dystopian-leaning sci-fi, I believe, sapphic.
I think that's right.
I am terrible again. I don't read synopses after I have decided to read it. So it's been on my TBR for a long time. I don't remember anything about what it said other than I know it's a dystopian. It's compared to The Last of Us meets The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. A dystopian romance, survival, sacrifice. I'm sure I'm going to love it, though, because I love those kinds of books. I like Ava Reed, the author. Also, the copy that I have, beautiful. I love the cover. So I am hopefully going to get through that in the next week or so. I did also check out the audiobook, so that might help me get through it a little faster.
All right, nice.
But yeah, I'm very excited to finally read it.
Cool. Tiff, do you know what you're reading next?
Yeah. So, I'm reading like a little bit. I started reading so many books over the weekend, but you guys saw me last Friday at the Bloodstone Bookshop, mm-hmm. where I found this book that I didn't know existed by an author that I really like. Oh, let me pull this book up. Look at the cover of this.
Visually, let's see.
You guys do this on Ooh. Your
phone. Oh, yes. I read it. You read it? Yeah. Oh, wow. It's interesting. For everybody listening who can't see the book, it's Death's Country, I think, by R.M. Romero.
Yes, thank you. This is like it's kind of like how cozy fantasy is like a new genre that I really love. I really love this little niche genre where it's like the writing is like poetry stanzas.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's like a whole story. It's a whole book, but you're reading poetry, but you're not.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful cover.
It's gorgeous. That drew my eye to it too, and I think it is a, correct me because you might be closer to it, it's a polyamorous queer retelling of like Orpheus and Eurydice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and it's young adult. So yeah. It's like they're teens in a like three person polyamorous relationship. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they go okay. to the underworld together. And it's I'm loving it so far. Oh yeah, I already started it. But yeah, I freaked out when I saw this because the author's previous book, it's The Ghosts of Rose Hill, was just really beautiful. I loved it so much. It like actually inspired me to like write some poetry and songs like from immediately closing the book. I was like, I need to write. So anyway, really, really like
this. That's author. Cool. That sounds interesting.
I went on this whole rant to someone I had never met before at, you know, that which happens at Silent Book Club because people are just showing up.
Right.
But I went on this whole rant about how much I love this author to someone I had never talked to before, didn't ask for her name. I just really want to talk. Like, let me tell you about this book since you're standing right next to me. And then I was like, I'm so sorry, my name's Tiff.
I don't know. I feel like those kinds of conversations in bookstores are a lot of fun. Somebody did that with us. We stopped in Barnes & Noble recently. I had asked Jason about one of the books on the shelves, and the woman next to us in the aisle was like, oh, I've read that. It's really good, and like started telling us about it.
And then they just leave. I'm like, thank you, person who thank I you. Don't know your name. Thank you for dropping that information. Well, I'm excited that you're reading that. I haven't really heard many people talk about it, but yeah, I read it, I think, last year, and I really enjoyed it. It was just different because, like you said, the it's like in poetry, it's in stanza. It's not a novel, but it's still a great story. And so,
yeah. Stanzas. Yes. Yeah, there's like, is Poet X, I think, is also written that way. And then The Black Flamingo is my favorite in that specific kind of genre. The Black Flamingo is my favorite one out of that.
I'll have to look that one up.
It's like a queer awakening kind of book. So it's not like fantasy or anything. But yeah, it's cute.
Nice.
Nice. Well, Jason, what are you reading next?
Yeah, next up for me is a book called The Fellowship of Puzzle Makers by Samuel Burr. I actually was going to start it about a week ago. I put in the audiobook and I started, you know, listening to like the first minute or so, but it started off with an author's note. And the author was saying that the book, which I have the physical book, I try to read them in tandem if I can, but I was on the go. So I was going to start audiobook, but the author said that the book itself has lots of puzzles in it that were adapted for the audiobook. And I was like, Oh, wait. I don't want to cheat myself of the experience. I want to do the puzzles.
You want to do the puzzles?
Yeah,
for
so
sure.
I stopped the audiobook. I switched to a different book. But the book itself is a heartwarming story about a group of people who all share a common interest in puzzles and about the power of friendship. And it's for people who love to solve things. It's about reading between the lines and finding hidden meanings. And I love puzzles. I love riddles. And so when I heard that, I mean, I didn't know that there was going to be actual puzzles or anything in it. I just thought it would be about puzzled people. But when I heard that, I was like, oh, no, I definitely need to be able to sit down and read this and take my time with it. So now that our podcast book is out of the way, I don't have a deadline. I will jump over to that and read that. So I'm really excited about that. I've been wanting to read that for quite a while.
That's cool. Yeah.
The name is giving Lord of the Rings. It's very cute.
Yeah. The Fellowship of Puzzle Makers. Yeah. So
this sounds like a really good like gift for someone who likes puzzles and Lord of the Rings. I'm already like, yes. Like it.
Yeah. I will. I'll have to let you know what the puzzles are like. I wonder how intricate they are. Like how integral to the story are they? Or are they just a fun little cherry on top? I mean, I'm fine either way, but it'd be fun to kind of really get in there and take my time with the puzzle. So I don't know. I feel like I said puzzle like 50 times in the last 2 minutes.
It's like one of those words where if you say it too many times, you're like, am I saying this word right?
Yeah. Or you look at it, it's like, is that the way it's spelled?
Mm-hmm.
It looks weird. All right. Well, cool. Thank you for sharing what you're all reading next. Some good books around for all of us. All right. Let's wrap this up. Tiff, thank you so much for joining us. It was a blast having you. I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. We've had guests who didn't enjoy the book, and I always feel bad about that. but you did, so thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Do you want to share any social media or let people know where they can find you, your music, anything else that you do?
Everything that I do is under Fictional Tiff. So you can follow me on Instagram. You can follow my music. I'm actually releasing a song this Friday, and it's about my religious trauma. So perfect for...
I will have to listen.
Yeah. It's definitely not like... There's no symbolism. It's just a direct, I didn't have a good time with Christianity, and I'm mad about it. So
sometimes we don't want symbolism, and we need to be blunt about it.
Yeah, the song is called Holy, and I like purposely made it kind of look like a creepy worship album cover. So it really, I advertised myself as a pop girly earlier, but it's like a dark rock song. And it's definitely was like my therapy song after leaving Christianity. So,
okay. Yeah. I'll keep an eye out for it. I'll look for it on Friday.
Yeah, it'll be out by the time this episode releases. So everybody go check it out. Cool. Thanks again for joining us. Laura, thank you also for being here as always. And of course, to our listeners, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. You can find us, as always, on social media at Shit We've Read, and also on Discord if you want to jump there. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review. It really does help. So whatever app you listen to, just drop us 5 stars if you'd like to. That'd be great. If you want to support us beyond that, you can get merchandise, or you can place a one-time donation on PayPal or Venmo. Links to all that are on our social media, or on our website. The link tree is there. You can find all that. And for next episode, for next month, we are going to be doing an After Dark book. We are currently... So it's Bella's pick. If you have listened to our episodes in the past, you know that Bella's picks have a troubled history, I'll say. And so
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. So I'll say we're tentatively excited for her next pick, which is Bull Moon Rising by Ruby Dixon. In a world of magical artifacts and fantastical beings, a woman determined to save her family joins forces with an unlikely partner. I will say that this wasn't her first choice, but one of us had already read the pick that she had, so we forced her to choose a new book. So hopefully it's a fun read. But either way, it'll be fun. After Dark episodes are always fun, and people seem to enjoy them, so... You know, join us for that. And I think that does it for us. Again, thank you, everybody. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Shit We've Read is hosted by Laura Benson and Jason Rico, with music by Joshua Chilton and editing by Jason Rico.
To join the discussion on this and all other books we've read, find us at Shit We've Read on Instagram and TikTok.
For more information about us or to request transcripts, please visit shitwevered.com.
Thanks so much for listening.